Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning or evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to
Good night to all. And that was the man, Mr. Stevie Wonder, and Send Your Love. We're in need of your love today. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kenerick, and I am pleased to see that many of you have joined us again tonight on our talk show, Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies. I see that some of you have returned with us, and tonight we will be discussing molestation, rape, and incest. Child abuse is one of the worst types of experiences that a minor could have. For those of us who have grown up in a loving, caring, and protected environment, we could not even begin to imagine the sense of betrayal and being lost that an abused child could suffer. On the other hand, child molestation, rape, and incest are abuses that exist on a different dimension or level of terror that inflicts permanent scars on a child. And when we talk about child molestation, rape, and incest, we are saying tonight because we know that child molestation, rape, incest have no barriers. Both male and female children have suffered these kinds of abuses. Tonight we will discuss the hidden taboo of incest and its deleterious impact on the victim. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kenerick, and tonight we will be holding this discussion. We will also have on the call with us several guests who have come in and who have spoken with earlier on, and they're going to come in and share some of their experiences, and some of them might ask questions that we will answer. So I want to thank all of you who are already on and those who are listening. We have listeners from all around the planet. We have listeners from just about every continent. But tonight I'm going to say don't learn alone. Take the time now to call up a friend and let them know that there is teachings that is going on tonight which will change their lives. Teachings that will cause them to be more aware and understanding so that they could even begin to identify some of the signs in their friends or in your friends' children, or they can look back on their own lives and understand the extent to which the scars of molestation and rape and incest have inflicted upon their souls. The purpose of the discussion tonight is to provide insights and understandings for people to be more aware and to be more dynamically involved in making a change, for them to have a better understanding on how to manage the fallouts of this terror There are many persons who have been sexually molested as children, still have not opened up to share their feelings, although the impact of their experience of terror are still affecting their lives.
Yes.
In this discussion, I will rely heavily on information on some of my research that are in my published works. In 2019, I published 7 titles. Among them are several volumes that address aggression and violence in people that are closely connected or related. And I coined the phrase aggression in proximity relationships. And when I talk about proximity relationships, I talk about the cognitive, the emotional, and the behavioral aspects of the relationships. Very often, a perpetrator has a certain knowledge of the person that they are aggressing. They also have a certain feeling, and the victim has a certain kind of feeling or a range of emotions toward the person that is victimizing them. And then there is a certain behavior that they could evoke. And those are the dynamics that I talk about in these books. Sometimes it is referred to as addressing aggression in proximity relationships. And that is because I have designed a new approach to address aggression and violence. This approach is one that directs healing at the neurological level. And to be honest with us, we are alive because of our spirit, soul, and our body. And the brain is the powerhouse of the soul and the body. And of course, in the brain, we have structures, we have cells, we have neurons and glial cells, and we have brain regions and brain areas. So one of the most important things that I learned when I was researching was that the basis for victimization and aggression is laid in the womb. In other words, a person who is likely to be victimized or a person who is likely to engage in aggression, they begin to demonstrate that, or they begin to lay the platform for that while they are still a fetus. So before I go into any depth of this approach, we are going to stop a while to listen to one of my favorite songs. And this is a song by Mr. Barry Weber. Once we get back, I have some special guests with me on the show tonight. And one of them in particular has agreed to share his story of terror. And it's one of the worst cases of incest that I have heard. So stay tuned and we will be right back. And while we listen to Mr. Barry Weber, I would ask you to just reach out and call your friends and let them know that there is some good information that is going on today and they will benefit. And it will be a loss if they're not on to hear and to participate. So give them a call, and we're going to listen to Mr. Barry Weber. Mr. Barry Weber is a Hasidic Judaic person. He lives in Brooklyn, New York, and I very, very much like his music. And we're going to play Abizel. Abizel is a song that talks about the fact that a person from their inception, they are named and they are called and they are chosen. And in spite of what we experience in our lives, we've been called from the foundation or before the foundation of the earth. So we're going to stop now and we're going to listen to Mr. Barry Weber and Abizel.
Thank you.
That was the man, Mr. Barry Weber, one of our own native Hasidic Judaic entertainer, and he hails from Brooklyn, New York. My name is Dr. Yvette Taylor Kinnerick, and I'm your host and sponsor. You're listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. Tonight we have a very, very special guest on the show. She is a very good friend of mine, a young woman that I love much, and I have done a bit of mentoring in her life. I've learned from her, and we've both learned from each other. And I'm going to bring her on right as at this time. And she could, if she so chooses, introduce herself, or she could remain anonymous. And she's going to tell us first about her story, her experience. Your mic is open. Your microphone is open. Your microphone is open. Yes.
You're hearing me okay?
We are hearing you. We're hearing you.
Very well. Good night, everyone. And I know you told me I have the option. My name is Deborah. And yes, I'm a very good friend. And I love Dr. Kinnerick, Your Excellency. Thank you so much for the opportunity. My story takes me back as a preteen. When I can recollect now and going back, I had an uncle who could not read. And I would have to read his mail every week when mail comes in. And the horror started when one day he asked me to come into his room and read his mail. And I was about to take the letter to read it, and instead of the letter, he said to me, he wants me to have sex. I'm 8 years old in this to me. I was scared. I was scared to the point where I got dumb. I could not respond. I just drew the bed to me and just started to cry. So my mom entered the room and asked what had happened. She didn't realize that he had hit me. When he realized I was making noise, he gave me a very hard slap. And that caused me to just be bawling. I was just bawling. When my father got home, I explained to him what happened. I'd already gotten money from his brother. And he believed what his brother told him. So in believing his brother, I got licks on my back. So badly, put me to kneel down on his foot, beat me to the point where I could not lie on my back for weeks. My mother did not do anything to stop him. I was wondering if she could have done anything. No one stopped him. Forward in, I'm 11, and we're moving to a new home, but everyone is moving, including my uncle. But he refrain from going down that road again after that incident, because my mom threatened him with a cutlass. But I'm still living in the house with him. Then I had a brother, half brother, who put that question to me. He wants sex from me and kind of run me down into another room. And I was like, I'll hike all night into the morning till about 4 o'clock. By that time, my parents got back home. I was being babysat by my older cousin. By 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm hearing my mom talking, and she asking my cousin what. I got some sleep, I think maybe about an hour. So about 7:30, I'm up. And I'm being interrogated by my father. What did I do? I'm the one upset, but he's asking me what I did. So I'm explaining what happened. My half-brother was on the ground. He had a from head to toe, and when he came up from the sheet, it's a heat wave. And I find it very strange. He was from head to toe, and he's going through. You have a heat wave in Trinidad at that point in time. And I told my father what he did. And my father said to me, maybe he was wearing, enticed him to do that. I said, what? I'm a little girl to him, and I'm his little sister. At that point in time, and what I was wearing enticed him. I had a nick and a vest. It's a heat wave. I'm his little sister. I should be protected. So I was put in a position at that point in time as being the person who encouraged his behavior based on how I was dressed. My mom nothing really to defend me at that point in time. But later on, she threatened that brother with a cutlass as well. So we thought he would have retreated. But what happened is, as I got a little older, there was a show used to be playing on TV called Little House on a Prairie. And I was falling to sleep on one of our couches. And I heard the sound of the theme song playing. And I got up if I wanted to see. I loved the show. I wanted to go see. And I woke up. I found that my legs were feeling wet. So I knew I'm not having my monthly, so that couldn't be. Only to realize that same half-brother stood up, did right there, and then wiped his remains on me. I'm screaming the top of my voice into my mother's room, and she's trying to find out what happened. Well, she threatened him with the cutlass and run him out of the house that day. So it was from one series to the next. As I got a little older, I am now being left alone with my father. My mom going to the grocery. And then it started to dawn on me, this is why those men were let off the hook. It's because his intention was also the same. He was just probably waiting until I got a little older for him to start. I felt like there was no one I could have turned to and say and be safe or talk to and be assured that I'm okay. That didn't happen. I was actually put in a position where if I spoke about this, I and my mother would be put out of the house because we'd go and live on the street, and that I was ungrateful, and that he did everything for me, and with that he should be able to do what he wanted. And that will keep in my head, keep saying that to me over and over and over again. Until my neighbor, she was a couple houses away, called me one day and she said, you don't have to tell me what is happening in your home. The Holy Spirit told me. And I want to take you to see my pastor. And she did. But I was under house arrest after that. I could not go anywhere without my parents for fear that he didn't want anyone to know what was happening. Fast forward again. That was repeatedly. That was happening repeatedly. So if sometime my mom goes to the grocery, he will come. And was from one thing to the next. Fast forward a bit. I left home. I got married. I have two children living on my own a home, two vehicles. The dream. Quite a family, working, and we're peaceful and whatnot. And then I realized my husband, who was 16 years older than I was, started to get possessive. Possessive to the point where I could not even use the vehicles without him questioning, where am I going, what am I coming back, and things like that. And then one day, sometimes I used to take sewing work in. And one day, I told him I have a contract, but I have to meet the person. It's for a football team, and I have to meet the person to get the fabric and choose fabric and get a down payment. Can you take me? And he went with me. And when we got back home, he told me that I took him to meet his man, my man. And there's another outside man I had. And I'm like, what? I needed a lift. And he hit me. And that one lash floored me. And I was like, what is this going on? I was like, what is... I ran in the house. She witnessed what happened then. She called my mother immediately and said, you need to come here now. And I told my mom, remove me from the house, because I felt like if I stayed in the house, I would have killed him. But one lash had me so stunned. And that was the first time he hit me. My father said, go back, make amends, and try to save your marriage. I did. I went back and I tried. And then he started up again. The last time he hit me, handbag was thrown all, my shoes in a mess. It was in the front of my children. They witnessed the violence. They witnessed him, the way he was hitting and the way he fling me all about. We was in the yard, a matter of fact, and they witnessed it. And to date, I think my second daughter have not forgiven him for that. there was an incident that he beat me so badly and told me that I wasn't listening to him, that he felt he needed to teach me a lesson. And he beat me so badly that I couldn't open one of my eyes, my left eye. I was selling Mary Kay Cosmetics and was doing pretty well. And I told him I was going to purchase a car. And as soon as I told him that, he took the violence to the next level. And I just had to get out of that. Went to the police, told them what was happening. They lost my file. So no charges came up against him. I went back again. They lost the file. No charges came up against him. Until one officer told me to go to internal investigation and make a report. Forget the station and go to make a report. And I did. And that is when he stopped. But before we actually separated, he said to me, there were many times I came home with a gun, because he's a police officer. Many times I came home with a gun on me and I felt like shooting you and the children. And that is what cemented my decision never to return to that house. I took my children, I took bed, whatever I think they needed to use, I removed it from the house with help, of course. And I told them I will never come back to this house and I will never come back to you. But he tried. First to make me try. He was advised to court me all over again for the marriage to rekindle and whatnot. And he could not last a week doing that. He could not last a week. At the end of the week, he was so distraught, he started to get violent again. And I knew that was it. That was it. Could not try there anymore. And I started to bring my children up as a single mother with the help of my parents. After all of that, I felt like, just imagine, I have to go back home to the home of origin where it all started as an adult, single parent. I was fearful for my children. They were girls going back into that home. What if they tried that on my own? What will I do? Well, I don't know. Probably at that point in time, I'm saying, I will probably kill somebody. If any one of them touch my girl children, that will probably be my response. That didn't happen. That didn't happen, thank God. I put my foot down and I explained certain things. I'm here, but I'm going to build myself and leave. And I remarried. But even when I remarried, my new husband got the brunt of the fallout, or he got the produce, he got the result of all the violence and the incest and sometimes it was rape. So he got the result of me, the person I was then, very critical and judgmental and suspicious. That would have been me at that point in time. So the early part of our marriage was rocky and it was very testing and challenging. I really could not share myself with my children and him as I would have liked to, because I was protecting me, and it has affected my daughters to a point, my older two. It has affected them to the point where the relationship I have with me, I really have a better relationship with my girls, especially my second daughter, who hasn't released her father. At this of my life, I have been friends in my life. I have attended counseling and went into Bible school and getting to the Word of God and realized has to show me that not all men. I learned to love again. So I know my husband was that man shaped that I to come into my perspective of men. And I thank God for bringing me out clear to see out of that dark place, out of that place of unfairness and unfairness. So as well, because being in our region, I get to it at 15, 16, somewhere there. And the Lord will have it that there was a nurse in the house. I didn't know the woman was a nurse. And she immediately, she took one look at said, this child has ingested poison, get her to the hospital now. And on my way to the hospital, then for my life, then, I will say to me, if you want to go ahead and kill yourself, but don't kill him for me, meaning don't kill her husband, which is hard, kill him for her, because he is her breadwinner. So if you die, I could die. Go ahead and kill yourself. No, I went to the hospital, over my mind. Then who do I have? If this is my mom and she's saying this to me, I don't know what to do. Should I just try it again and try to just end my life at that point? It doesn't make sense going back. That's how I was feeling at the end. There was no one. There was nothing that I can hold on to, nothing to anchor myself at that point in time. My aunt, father's sister, came to the hospital. She was a midwife. And she asked me if I didn't like how my mother's soup was tasting, that I had to put seventh powder in it. She always finds humor in everything happens around. And I said, no, auntie, I didn't find so bad. Thinking that she would have probe and find out what had actually happened to help me, she covered it up. He was her brother. He was well known in the country, well known in other countries as well, an icon, as people will know him. So she didn't want others to know he had done, and she covered it up from the hospital to the rest of the family. So I had no one to hold on to feel safe, and I had to return to that house. So me now, I can give this story knowing that I have gone through it. Everything that could go wrong went wrong during my childhood. Went wrong. Studying was affected. I tried to study first, take the lights off on me. Go to your bed. You don't need to study that. As that era was, you don't need to study that. You just have to marry the man and he'll take care of you. She took the lights off, and I'm trying to go after a scholarship. I got partial. So he only had to pay part the fee, part of my school fee. Because every time he has to put money out, he wants payment in flesh. And I was working hard at that scholarship. And I got the partial scholarship. The principal congratulated me, and she said, I will do this for you. Even though you got partial, you'll put it down as full. Because she sensed something was happening. And I didn't get to do my final exam for TXC. I fell ill. Parents didn't see it fit to let the ministry know so that they can make special provision for me to do it after. None of that was done. I, after leaving secondary school, started to sew, and I used that money to put myself through some classes at Modern Business School to do programming and EDPM and things like that. And that is how I got employed and started to get ease myself out by getting more independent to move out of my parents' home. So I admonish at this point anyone even suspect that there's something similar going on. Talk to someone about it. It's something you don't even have to say the exact words. You can speak in a way that the person will understand. You could use other sometimes I talk to my girls, like, I can say something to them, but I don't want to say it direct. So I kind of work around what I'm saying, and usually my older daughter picks up on what I'm saying, and she says, yeah, mommy, I got a message. So sometimes you may not have to say exactly what's happening, but you make suggestions of certain things to the other person. Dr. Kinnery?
Yes, my dear. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my dear. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if there's anyone I want to ask any questions.
Deborah. Thank you so much. I met Deborah a long time ago. I would think maybe closer to about 15 years ago, at least nearly 20 years ago. I met Deborah, and I was doing a training on domestic violence, and she was one of the persons in the training. And there was a very, very interesting thing that happened one night. Deborah shared part of her story with us, and I remember just saying thank you, Deborah. And then there was another person with the same last name as Deborah, and she was also in the training, and she looked at me and she said, "No, Dr. Kinnerick, no, you can't do that, Dr. Kinnerick, you can't do that." Well, I decided I would do something, and the next thing I knew, Deborah was on the floor, and she was bringing things up, and it was one night, and everyone there was touched. But I want to share a couple of things, but before I do that, I want to ask Deborah, because I heard her saying she had no one to hold on to. Deborah, if you can use words to describe your emotions, tell us what your emotions were like when you were being abused. I mean, you had incest by three different male relatives, an uncle, a stepbrother, and your father. And your mother, who, you know, she did threaten them with a machete. We call it a cutlash, but she threatened them, and they kind of backed off. But she didn't, you know. Deborah, tell me, what were your emotions? And looking back, what would you have liked your mother to have done? What do you think your mother could have done? Could you understand why she did what she did, how she reacted? Just tell us. Tell us about that. Yes, I think what's happening is that you're breaking in and out.
Are you okay now?
Yes, it's better. It's better now, yeah.
Right, okay. For my emotions, when I'm not directly being affected, I'm okay. I'm laughing, putting on that mask, that is front. Actually to be here now. I don't want to be here. And every time I think a Friday is approaching and it may happen, I'll find out a reason if she's leaving the house to go with her. And then she'll say, no, you stay, as though I'm being a sacrifice to her means and ends. You need to stay. Because what is being said to us is, I am paying all the bills in here. And we're treating him like a doormat. He can't get what he wants. And what he wanted was me. And I would say, because of you, I haven't left your mother. And I'm like, what did I have to do? You know, why am I being I was actually being the sacrificial lamb here. Why am I being sacrificial? And at that school, I started to look for gang, not so much gang, but other people to align with, who was smoking marijuana, and I skipped my piano lessons and just decided, look, I don't really want to do anything serious right now. I just need to clear my head. And with clearing my head, it's like it started going down a rabbit hole, doing all other things that you are not to be doing. So reaching to the point where I felt like I could have killed him. At one point in time, that's where I reached. And when I said, no, I can't kill him, so better I just kill myself. And that's what I led to drinking the soup of the sevens powder in it. And so that would be it. I can go slowly. It was demeaning. It was looking for another word. Other than being demeaning, it's I was put in a position where to question, why was I born? that everything that could go wrong is going wrong and went wrong. And I think as you brought it to my attention one day, Dr. Kank, when you asked me if I ever read the book called The Child Called It, or the book It.
Yes.
And I wrote a part. I read a part of the book. I didn't read the whole book, but I started to get the message just from the parts that I read, you know. And not having someone to say, look, this is happening to me, even gesture, because if I gestured, it was like, oh, hush him out, you don't know what you're saying. So my aunt shut it down, my mom shut it down, and I started to ask why. Well, they wanted to see his face, and they didn't want to know that she needs to go out in the street and have to go and work, because he stopped her from working when she moved in. He said, you know, wife of his must be working and he will take care of her. But that was also abuse towards her. She could not have her own money. And he would lock her out of the bedroom. And she'd have to climb through the window to get her underwear and clothes and towel and toiletries to use them without him knowing. And she said to me one day, I told her, till I can remember telling her, she said, I told her, the next time he let you back in the room, take out about 5 or 5 pieces of underwear, towel, some extra clothes, and some money, and put it in my drawer. So when he lock you out again, it would not affect you that much. You will have things to use. And she did that. She asked him, when did I get so wise as a child? She did that. But one of his employees realized something was going on and gave my mom money to hold on to, because he didn't give her money to buy groceries. And then I started, then hate, some hate started to build, that you didn't care even if we eat. You're making money, you're well off, you have your house, you have your 2 vehicles, and you making sure you didn't want to eat. It was being wicked. And his employee gave my mom money to say, make sure I make groceries enough, make sure that you and the children could eat. And he fired the guy. For doing that when he found out. Really mixed. Every time I'm in school, they ask me to write a composition of someone who has make an impression on my life. Also, I will write about him. And my teacher was trying to figure out why. But it's not, I was writing not so much of what he was doing wrong, writing about the man himself to be. Anybody who will know that person. Icon, and he came from nothing. He came from a house with nothing else, just one green pig and salt for months. And he came from that perspective, how what a great person he is, and at least try to ignore the bad side and continue to go back to my composition. Him, but it was him. But I guess that was my way of dealing with not the short of meaning to me, claim to a hero and nothing else. What my mom and his sister was doing, protecting him. And didn't realize until I got older to understand what was actually happening to me. He was wearing me. But the things that he was saying and the things that he was doing was wearing me out to the point where I can say what you're doing is okay. It was like the emperor and his clothes. And everybody around him, he can say the chair is brown and everybody else will say yes, it's brown. And then after the time I know that chair is white, we all could see it white, but because you said everybody else, okay, that's when the fight was already an adult. That's when the fight starts. And I totally went everything that he was saying, I don't want to hear anything you have to say. And I must say one more thing that could be really, it was shocking. I married, moved away from home, and he came on my job and asked me to go to dinner with him, lunch with him. And I said no. And he said, why? I said, but why should I go to lunch with you? I have my husband, I can go to lunch with, I don't need to go to lunch with you. And then he said, But it's not lunch alone he was thinking about, because he understand my husband not working right now. Something on the outside that could help home with money and stuff. Now, it's my father, you know, saying this to me. And I said, no. And I called security for him to put him off the compound. And then my mom called and asked what happened. And I told her, he had already tried to give her some lies. And I told her, I said, he came on my job to proposition me because, you know, my husband is not working, so that he could be my man outside. That is to tell you how low he is thinking. I am not home, but he insists that he must get at me. But I could say now, if we were to look at it in a supernatural realm, it wasn't him. The enemy was after me. Me subdued and not move forward in my life. And it's only when I accepted the Lord and started to grow in him, I realized those were things to keep me at bay. So it was the abuse from the men. And as I got into the commercial arena and work, senior males will also be aggressive towards me. And call me all sorts of names, and sometimes I'm not even there, but I'm getting blamed for stuff. And even in the church. And the senior pastor started to aggress me, and I was to realize this wasn't them. This was a spirit. So I know Dr. Canary could start.
So, Ms. Deborah, there are some things that I'm going to talk about here for our listeners, and we do have people that's on the call here tonight, and I know that some of them would have questions, and we will give them some time for them to answer some questions, ask their questions as well. But I'm going to add a few things on what you have said. But you know that night I did what is called a deliverance in churches, or what is called exorcism in other ways and terms. So I'm talking now about 17 years ago, and I am someone who still do deliverance exorcism. I don't do it with all the fanfare and all the shouting and screaming and bawling and dying down. Well, you know, I do it very quietly.
Yes, but you know how that happened that day is when I shared and then you shared about your experience. You were wondering why you were telling me all of this about your degrees and whatnot and what had happened to you. And then in the room, I started to bleed. And that's what you told me. That was my deliverance taking place there. And we started to walk around in the circle, and the others started to pray. Yes, yes. That day was really, really awesome. It was changing. It was life-changing. Yes.
Yeah, yes. And deliverance and exorcism is very, very simple, and I do training for people who are interested in doing that as one of their approaches to healing. It is a very, very, very viable approach, and it is something that is recognized and accepted in psychiatry, psychology, integrating spirituality and religion. It is a diversity perspective, and of course, there are a plethora of mental illness, psychiatric conditions, and social conditions that are undergirded by spiritual interferences, and unless that is addressed, the person will go around in circles and circles and never get full healing. And you know, in my line of work, I hear of so many people who have experienced aggression as children. You know, some children, one woman I was talking with, she said that she was aggressed. She was being sexually abused by someone who was a family member. And very often they have a proximity relationship with you. They might be blood, or they might be near blood, like family, like friends of the family. I've met men who have been raped as children, by members of their friends of their family. So this is of pandemic proportion. It is underreported, and it is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Because for all the years, you, for example, experienced that, and not even the people in your home, even though they knew what was happening, they turned around and they beat you. That's also a very common reaction and response to incest. So I just want to throw some things out here. There are groups of people who are actually trying to say that incest is something that it's not a big deal, and people could engage in incestuous relationship, like adults, like an adult person could have a relationship with their father, that's fine, right? And although you found that that was repulsive, they're saying that siblings, that's okay. And, you know, you look at how things are progressing in our society, and you're holding your breath because you don't know when they will make all efforts to change the law to make incest be something that's acceptable. And at that time, what would children do? What would children who have your experiences do? Now, people will say that incest is normal. It's just an extension of an aspect of love. And I was reading a research which says that bed bugs engage in incestuous mating, and they say that rats and some rats would have sibling incest and so on. But from my research, I know that when animals are mating, when animals out in the wild get to their mating season, they send out pheromones. So when you send out, when you are in the case of females who are experiencing their cycle, and even before they experience, start having their monthly cycles, there is a specific time. Let me say something here. Each one of us have a cycle, and we have a cycle of wealth acquisition, a time when we are prime to create wealth. And that cycle is a biological rhythm, and it is present in us as children. And then when we mature to where we begin to mate, where we have husbands and wives and spouses and so on, that is a specific period when you become fertile. And I had something funny last year. One of my sisters called me and said, I had done a training one night, and the next day, about a week later, one of them said, I have never seen so many men come into my life. And I said, yes, let me check your cycle. And I went back, I got their date of birth, and I counted their cycle, and I said, okay, yes, you're in that prosperity cycle. And then another one of my sisters called me one morning, and she said, girl, in one morning I've had three men offer to marry me. And I said, okay, give me your date of birth again. Let me check your cycle. Yeah, she was in her productive cycle. And so at that time, we send out pheromones. But out in the wild, animals send out pheromones, and there is something in the pheromones that they send out that prevents other of their own breed, like chimpanzees, although they say they too mate incestuously, but let's say it's wolves or bears, they will have something in their pheromones that will not attract any creature out in the wild that is related to them. So in the research, one of the things I also learned, and it's something that's out there, when we send out pheromones, it affects the olfactory, the olfactory parts of the brain. And it is at a subliminal level, so we don't, we don't pick up on the pheromones. And that's a deterrent against incest among families. But there are some things that contradicts or cause those natural deterrents to go awry. One, widespread infidelity. Two, generational experiences of incest. So you might not have asked your aunt, but she might have been the victim of sibling incest as well. And she lived, right? And that's something that is quite common. In slave society, there was a lot of inbreeding. So inbreeding is very similar to incest, because it blurs the olfactory aspects of your spirit, or the way you function in the electromagnetic field, and then you can attract people that are near of kin. When you live in blended families, when you have, so like in your case, you had a stepbrother, right? And so you don't know if in your father's generational line, so it's a genetic pathway, and there is a way to address that. And I have a very interesting story about that, but I am not going to go into that tonight, because I see there are others on the call here, and I see that they just want to make comments. They want to respond. Now, I'll give just one story. I once had a client who was brought to me because he was going onto websites to look at boys having sex. And he was just like about 11, and the parents were mortified because they said, oh, he's going to be homosexual. And they were just like losing it, so they brought him. And I got their permission, of course, and then I talked to the child, and this is what happened. That child had an older brother. That older brother had a girlfriend. The girlfriend had a son that was just a little older than my client's son. When the brother and his girlfriend are engaging in sex in their bedrooms and they release the pheromones, it triggers activities in my client's son as well as in the son of the girl. And because it triggered the pheromones, it activated their sexuality, and they began engaging in intercourse together. Now, when people have, now, there is a lot of things about anal sex and whatever, but what happens is that, and I talk about this in some of my books, I think in the book called Sexual Healing, what happens is that there are areas in the body that is not designed for direct stimulation, because if you do that, you just wreck the entire mating process. And then very often what happens is that the couples begin to be very angry with each other, and it's not as what it, because a lot of us, we've been trained by Hollywood, and Hollywood has not given us the right answers. And I do run seminars from time to time for couples to repair their intimacy, because if it's not repaired, it means that their wealth the ability to bring in wealth, the ability to raise their children in an environment where they could provide for them properly, that goes through the window. So there are a lot of dynamics that are at work. What I want to do at this time, I'm going to play a song from Mr. Yaakov Treki, and he is a Judaic performer as well. And I'm going to share the Tfilat Halak. And this is a song that is written, it's a prayer that it's a bride's prayer. Now, I'm going to say that sex is the platform for wealth acquisition. One of the things that is common among the Jewish tradition is that God or Hashem is invited into the relationship. And there is a reason for that. The circumcision that is done is a covenant with the Creator, with Hashem. So what it is a marriage with Him. And this was to prevent, because very early, sometimes you see little boys being, they have an erection, they're still in the crib and they have an erection. Well, yes, you're going to say, well, what's going on here? But guess what? Those nice little dainty babies you have there, their wisdom is way ahead of what you think. And they have an understanding of right and wrong. They have moral judgment from 3 months old. So don't let that nice little bundle fool you. There is a lot that we have to learn about. So the marrying to the Shekinah is to make that covenant of blood. And then later on, when the actual marriage happens with a girl or a woman, then that connection, they can bring them into the Shekinah. And that is the pathway through the electromagnetic realm or the spirit realm that brings your wealth to you. We're not going to go into that tonight. I'm going to play Tefillat Kala. And once I come back, I will open up the lines. I see several persons here have been waiting and they've been on hold for a while. I'd give them the opportunity to ask questions. You might answer, or if it's directed at me, I will answer. But let's just listen to Mr. Yaakov Treki and the Tefillah.
Thank you.
ריבונו של עולם, הרי נגמר לפניך בשמחה גדולה. וקיימנו והגיענו לזמן הזה, וזכינו להקים בית נאמן בקדושה וטהרה לעבודתך.
And that is Mr. Yaku Shreki and Tefillat Kala, A Bride's Prayer. It is very appropriate for me to play that song tonight for you. It is a prayer for peace in the home and to make us friends. When you have incest and rape and child molestation, there is never peace in the home. And the people in that home and our friends. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, and you are listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destiny, and we are discussing the secret terror of incest, rape, and child molestation. And we are going to open the microphone now. There are several persons on the line, and I'm going to open your mic, 786-389. I am going to open your microphone for your comment, questions, or contribution to the discussion. Your mic is open.
Hello, good night.
Good night, good night, good night. Good night. Yes, yes.
I have been molested from 5 to 12. And sometimes I am over 50 now, and sometimes it still gets to me. Sometimes I get afraid, I become afraid, I get scared, and I shower 3-4 times a day, and it bothers me sometimes. So why? Because I am over 50, and why does it bother me still?
I'll answer that, Ms. Deborah. Ms. Deborah, these are scars that are created, and the scars live in the brain. Until a person is 17 years old, and definitely for the first 7 years of their lives, there is myelination happening. There are new neurons that are growing. And when a person is sexually abused, especially at a tender age like that, as early as that, it creates such a shock to the system that it's almost like when you have a power surge and wires are burned out. This is what happens, and the scars go deep into the memory, in the amygdala, and it affects your conscious and non-conscious person. And we will continue this discussion again, because I know there are a lot of questions that are there and questions that remain unanswered. And we will revisit this discussion again. But child molestation and incest is one of the most horrible experiences that a person can have. It is a trauma. And you will suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder throughout your life, and that's why you get afraid for no reason. That's one of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. The thing about us when we are abused like that, we tend to invite the same kind of behaviors over and over again in our lives and in the lives of our children. So therefore, it is upon us to get healing. Because when you get healing, you deter the same thing from happening to your children and to your children's children. So it is perpetuating because you are, if you have not been diagnosed, you are demonstrating signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. And that is one of the phenomena that people who have been abused, that they have experienced. Anything that you would like to add, Ms. Deborah?
Yeah, being abused from 5 to 12 and then coming to United States and getting married and then getting raped by your husband. And when you call the police, and we tell the police what happened, the police said that's your husband. Okay. Your husband didn't rape you.
Yes.
The police said that your husband cannot rape you. That's your husband. The husband cannot rape the wife. There are days that I don't want to hear. I don't want to see anybody. There are days that I just want to drive my car into the ocean. There are days that I want to kill myself because I feel dirty. And I shower, as I said, I have to shower 3-4 times a day. If I don't shower 3-4 times a day, I go ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
I literally go ballistic. And if a man tells me that, oh, you look so nice, I lose it. I lose it, literally lose it. So sometimes I feel like this morning I felt like I'm a nobody. I am not worthy. And I'm like, you know, and I'm trying my best to rise above it. I'm trying because I'm dating someone and this person is very, very nice, and I find ways just to aggravate or to create a problem. And I don't want that, but I am trying. I am really, really trying. But there are days that I just want to lock myself in a room and I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to see anybody. And it's getting to me now, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do anymore because I can't do this. I cannot be doing this for the rest of my life. And I keep saying, this been over, and why is it's still mm-hmm. in me?
Can I can I share or even suggest? You, I hear you say that you're indicating that you're writing about it, but have you shared any of this with your new partner?
Yes, I did. But I'm supposed to be getting married, but I'm scared and I'm afraid because I'm afraid that I am going to hurt him because I say things to him and he's like, what happened? You're going through one of your moods or this and that and the other. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. Just leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I know how I feel.
And all that you're saying, I'm hearing you saying, it's all on you. And
yes,
and that's one time when I realized it was all on me, and I said my challenge, breaking through that wall that I put up there for the same reason, where I felt that as soon as he said something to me, it meant something else, and I was
exactly
towards it, and he means nothing by it, and they're just making and I had to learn, he realized that there were things that he can do in the line of being a better husband to help me understand that I did not need to fight him for anything that was going on, that he was there for me. He was always reassuring. That's why I asked if you shared it with him, because he could also help with that, with this period, this season that you're going through. Not to walk on eggshells, but there are things that he can do to reassure you. But you will have to open up to him. So the mixed feelings that you're having, you will have to, that saved my husband and I. We slept in the night talking. He would stay up with me. I know he wants to sleep. I said, no, stay up now. Hear this. This is how I feel. This is, he may not share how he feels about it right away, but he would listen. And he would listen. And he will go and Google. He would hear certain words I would use, and he will go and Google and get the meaning of what I said and try to understand what I was going through. And that helped me a lot, knowing that. Remember, I said earlier, I didn't have an anchor. I didn't have someone I could have bounced these things off, because saying to my mom, she didn't understand what I was saying. And as you said, Dr. Knight, she was also abused, my mom. She was abused as a child. So it's after I got an adult, she then shared that with me. So talking with your spouse, especially if you're going to be married to this man, will play a very important part in your healing process.
I grew up in a house knowing that the person that I thought was my sister was my mother. When I told her what the person was doing to me, she spanked me and told me that I was trying to cause problem in the family, and the person who was doing the molestation against me, he told me if I tell anybody, he's going to kill my grandmother. And being at 5 to 12, knowing that my grandmother is the only person I have, I just used to let it happen because I didn't want him to kill my grandmother. Right, so it happened from 5 to 12 years. 5 to 12. So my childhood wasn't a nice, I don't know anything about the childhood. I don't know anything about growing up in a house and know, oh, this is your mother and this is your father. I don't have that kind of experience. And then to come out here to the United States and then get raped. And then I have this, meet this person. We've been friends for 15 years and he's very loving, very nice. And like last night, I just lashed out for nothing. And he was like, what's going on? What's going on? Are you okay? Are you okay? What, somebody told you something? And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, just leave me alone. And I hung up the phone. And then this morning he called me and he's like, are you okay? I worry about you. What's going on? And I'm like, just leave me alone. I just need you to leave me alone.
Over 50 now?
Yeah. That's why I said, why am I, these things, if these things happen and I should be, I should be.
I want to share here. I was going to ask for something else. It could be something here. You're also premenopausal.
Yeah.
And your emotions and your thyroids and things like that can run havoc on you right now with hormones, with your hormones. can really run havoc with you. My pre-menopausal, the perimenopausal, I got very emotional. And once I started to develop any type of pain in my abdomen or lower bowel or in the uterus area, it threw me back to the times when I was being molested, to the point where my doctor realized that, my gynecologist realized that half of my pain was not physical. He said half of your pain, he believed it was emotional, and he insisted that I go to the outpatient psychiatric clinic and allow them to assess me. Now, when I shared my story with the counselor there, she said to me, she cannot help me, that I was already been through my worst, and she believed that what I've been through and what helped me come out of it, I need to help her help the other patients. And I end up sharing the price and all that in this time. So I'm saying to you, some of what's happening there is sending you back based on your emotional state now. Very emotional, plus that perimenopausal state that you could be going through right now. Dr. Kinnerick, you want to share?
Yes. Yeah, there's something that I would like to share. And what it is first it was a theory. Freud had put the theory forward, but now we know that there is physiological explanations for certain things. And for example, the vagus nerve is a nerve that it travels from the vagina, so the word vagus, vaginal, comes from, it means vagabond, it means to run away, it means to run wild. So actually when people talk about the female parts, they're actually saying you're a vagabond and so on, because that word vagus is the same word that is translated when Cain said of a vagabond and a wanderer I will be. It just meant vaginal. First type of person. Mm-hmm. But that's just the etymology of the word. But the vagus nerve wanders all across the body, the heart, the liver, just all the organs it touches, and it ends in the ninth cranial nerve area in the brain. So intercourse is supposed to trigger the sense of peace all throughout the body. However, when the intercourse is terror, when it's incest, when it is rape, this thing goes throughout your body and goes into the brain, and it surges and it could damage neurons and neural pathways and so on. So that's one of the things. The other thing is that we are now beginning to realize that we carry trauma in different parts of the body. And, you know, sometimes when I go out into the streets and I look at people who they have a little extra weight on them, I can look at where they have their dubbed weight, and I can literally tell what kinds of problems they're dealing with because of the area where you see the weight being lodged. So when we talk about the abdomen, the womb area, that is an area that is related to sexuality. And it is one of the areas where you carry the emotions of sexual abuse, sexual misuse. And it happens to both men and women. So now I've told you a little story. Don't go around the place looking at all the men who have large stomachs and try to diagnose them, because it goes a little deeper than that, but it's one of the primary mm-hmm. areas that we carry. We carry emotions, we carry guilt, we carry frustration in that area of the body. So now I've told you that. I've given you a little secret that I use when I am helping people lose weight. And so you might come in one day and I will tell okay, let's deal with your sexual traumas and so on, because you're at that stage where it's time to lose the weight in the stomach area. So, yes, it is going to be related to the emotions. It's going to be related to your thyroid, because your thyroid, and when you come on down the thyroid, people have either one or the other kind of illnesses. Very often it's cancers or it's diabetes. It has to do with the way that the thyroid is functioning. You see, we are a whole being. We are a whole body. And every aspect of our being has significant relationships with each other and the way that we present and function in the world. So that's just my little bit of insight there, as you asked a question about going into, please remind me of the word, Miss Deborah, because you know I'm getting older. So tell me what it is. Menopausal, perimenopausal syndrome. And you got to fix that. You have to fix that for your children and for your grandchildren. And there are people who are listening here tonight, and you might have had experiences of rape, child molestation, and incest. I strongly suggest that you get help. You can reach out to me. My number is 407-236-4501. And my website is www.CHarley.com/EYELLOW.net. I am your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, and you're listening to Empowering Lives and Shaping Destinies. So I see we have other callers on the line, and I'm going to open the microphone for 571-264. Your microphone is open in case you have any questions or comments or contribution to the discussion. 571-264, your microphone is open. Okay, so while we are thinking about that, while we are deliberating on our further contributions, I want to play a song by Mr. Yakov Shreki. It's called Aleinu. And Aleinu is a song. It is a prayer again. There are a lot of prayers that are sung. And it is the prayer that is said at the end of the day as one is retiring for the night. Very often it is said just after the sun goes down. Well, the first star appear in the skies, which is usually around 75 minutes after sunset. And the Aleinu is said at that time. It could also be said on the Shabbat. And some people say it as part of their nightly routine before they go to bed. So please enjoy the soothing music of Mr. Yakov Shreki, Aleinu.
קולנו לשבח לאדון הכל לא תזכדו לו להיות יצא בראשי עולנו לשבח לאדון הכל לא תזכדו לו להיות יצא בראשי עולנו לשבח לאו אדון הכל לא תזכדו לו להיות יצא בראשי עולנו לשבח לאדון הכל לא תזכדו לו להיות יצא בראשי שלא יעשונו כגויי ולא יסתמונו כמשפחוי תואש אמה שלא יסתום חלקנו כואב שלא יסתום חלקנו כואב ודויר עלינו ככל המוינו שלא יסתונו כגויים יומרותו ולא יסתמונו
Hello, you're
And that was Mr. Yakov Shreki Olenu, and that is one of the evening prayers that I wanted to play for us because we are getting to that time. So before we wrap up for the evening, 786-389, is there any question or comment that you would like to make? Your microphone is open. Okay, while we are waiting for you to... Okay, you ready for us? You have any questions or comments that you'd like to make?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay.
I'm listening and I'm absorbing everything right now.
Okay. And 571-264, your mic is still, microphone is still open. 571-264. So while you are gathering your thoughts, we would go back to Ms. Rebra, who shared her story. 520-900, your microphone is open.
Hello.
Yes, yes, we are hearing you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good afternoon. Sorry, this is me, it's Rebra, and the 50.
Yes. Any further comments, contributions, questions?
Listening and absorbing the emotions that I feel at times, whatever I'm doing, I stop and I try sometimes to make a connection to, why am I feeling this way now? Is it, does it have something to do with happening to me now? Or does it have something that happened to me in the past? And if at that point I can make that connection or make that, be able to separate what I'm feeling, I can practice what they call intelligent, emotional intelligence, actually not respond as I use out of emotions and observe, we want for better words, self-control.
Yeah.
I can do that now. I know with Katie, my mom being a doctor, that I used to realize that I can do this. I can control this. Don't allow it to control.
Yes. I would just add a little bit more information, and I hope that the information that I share would help you. Now, the brain is a very, very complex and highly, highly, highly wired system. So, for instance, if I were to think of someone, I think about them, they're 10,000 miles away, 5,000 miles away, their brain would light up. And if I have bad thoughts about them, then there will be areas of the brain that would light up that will trigger negative emotions. Or if I have good thoughts, then areas of the brain that has responsible for positive emotions would light up. So one of the things that I will talk about on in upcoming episodes is how sex is related to wealth and wealth acquisition, and why it is sometimes when persons are in a relationship, they have sexual encounter with their mate, and the next thing you know, everything has gone to you know, it's gone to hell and back. And that's because thoughts trigger thoughts. So there might be many scenarios where you might wonder, why am I feeling this way? Well, you have your past husbands, and they might be in relationships, and at that time they are actually engaging in sexual intercourse with someone else. It will trigger your brains. So you might get this feeling, but you don't know where it is coming from, because you're not aware as to where it is coming from. But I'm just giving you an example of where some of your triggers might come from. And I will go into greater depth in one of the following episodes where we could unravel some of these things, because it is through a similar process your wealth could be intercepted and be turned aside. So I want to thank all of you for coming. Deborah, I want to thank you for sharing your story. Deborah number one and Deborah number two, I want to thank you both for sharing your stories, because there are two Deborahs here tonight.
You're most welcome.
And most people, they never talk about this. They go to their grave, they get ill, they die early, they become tormented. Mm-hmm. It is good to have someone who you can reach out to and you can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
There might be people who are listening. Again, my number is 407-236-4501. You could go onto my website, www.CAsInCharlie, H as in Harry, A as in Adam, Y as in Yellow, E as in Early, L as in Lincoln.net. I do provide counseling. I do provide therapy. I have books that you can you could access and you can read. And you can reach out to me. Again, I want to thank all my listeners. And as usual, the switchboard is lit up tonight. And I see so many of you here. And I know there are lots of you in different parts of the planet. I know there are people in South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria, people from all over who listen in. And they send their feedback. I will upload this episode onto my website, so you can go on there. You can also come on to the blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/the neonation, one word, and you can retrieve this program. And tonight, as we close, I will play the Shirat Hanavad by Yossi Azrieli. I want to wish you good night and the peaceful music of Mr. Azrieli will bring peace and calm to your soul.
Thank you.